Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Hello, this is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Excited about our interview today. Dr. Amy Johnson returns. Yay! And we get to chat about some really great stuff that I think you guys will find very, very interesting. So I would love to introduce her, and then we're going to get right into a conversation that I think will be a ton of fun as we explore some very, very interesting topics. So Dr. Amy Johnson is a master life coach who works with clients worldwide through coaching programs, workshops, and retreats. She's the author of Being Human, Essays on Thought Mares Bouncing Back, and Your True Nature, and The Little Book of Big Change, The No Willpower Approach to Breaking Any Habit. Johnson has been regularly featured expert on The Steve Harvey Show and www.oprah.com, as well as The Wall Street Journal and Self Magazine. She devotes a large portion of her coaching practice to helping people end unwanted habits. And you can visit her at dramyjohnson.com. And of course, I will link to all her stuff below so you can find more of Amy. But Dr. Amy Johnson, welcome to the show. Hey, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, so super fun. When I will link to our other interview as well, but when Amy was on before, we really talked more about the binge eating and that sort of, you know, eating habit and compulsion area, because that's something that we both have in common and we both have a passion for. And so this time around, we're just going to kind of explore sort of the broader stuff that Dr. Amy Johnson does, and excited to go into that and like her Being Human book. And, you know, there are some neat topics there. So just kind of with that sort of broader perspective, tell us a little bit about Amy. Like, how did you get to where you are? Why do you do what you do? Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So I was what I call, and I'm saying this kind of tongue in cheek now, but like an anxious child. I don't believe in labels, as we'll talk about. I don't think they make any sense. But that's how I was labeled by myself and others as a kid. And I just, you know, not like extremely so. I mean, I was fine. I had friends. I like got along in life and everything. But just kind of retreated into my head a lot and was one of these like more serious kids that just, you know, just overthought things a lot and worried and tried to make sure everything was okay and everything was going to be okay. And yeah, that didn't work so well for me. Like, it, you know, it just was what it was. But as I started getting older, I started having a lot of anxiety. I started having panic attacks. I had panic attacks when I was a kid. I didn't call them that, but I just would worry a lot about like my mom dying when she would leave and just all kinds of stuff. And then as I got older, the anxiety got worse and worse. And when I was in graduate school, I was basically afraid to leave my apartment for a couple years, like really severe anxiety. And then that got better, and then it turned into other habits and things. And so, you know, that's basically why I do what I do, because I've just always been fascinated in, first of all, fixing myself. Like, I know it's not supposed to be this way, so why is it so darn hard? And yeah, what's going on? And then like fixing myself, and also I think it was mostly selfish, mostly wanting to fix myself, but also, you know, just really kind of knowing, like I knew things were supposed to feel easier and supposed to feel better. And I just wanted to kind of get to the bottom of why I didn't get that. Other people seemed to get that, and why didn't I get it?
Love it. And tell me a little bit about going into, I love what you said, like, you know, I knew that it wasn't supposed to be that way, or I knew that kind of wasn't my, you know, true nature. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what was it that that sparked you to think that it wasn't supposed to be that way? Like, what sparked you to think that it was supposed to be different? And a little bit about your philosophy of what is our true nature and like as humans?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think we all have this well of wisdom, insight, common sense, whatever we want to call it. When our minds settle down, we just know things, intuition, whatever we want to call it. It's all different words for the same thing, in my opinion. So I think part of what told me it wasn't supposed to be this way was just my own intuition. Like, even as a very anxious kid, in the back of my mind, there was no point when in the one hand, I would say, oh, this is how I'm wired. I always thought of it, even as a kid, I thought of it in terms of psychology, you know, and like, this is how I'm wired and this is my psychology. And that looked like a real thing, which it doesn't anymore. And I'd love to talk about, but it looked like, okay, this is a thing and it's there. But at the same time, I still knew, okay, there's got to be something bigger than psychology. As a little kid, I remember thinking that. And like, I remember kind of having these memories of being a really little kid and feeling really free and light and happy. And then getting to be a little bit older of a kid and going into my head. Like, I could almost remember that. So that, my own insight, I guess, and just seeing that, those memories, coupled with the fact that I also was, like I said, trying to fix myself and figure my parents out so that they could fix themselves. In my opinion, they needed it. So I was reading like Wayne Dyer. I was reading Marianne Williamson. Like, I was reading this stuff from the time I was like 8 or 9. I mean, other kids were reading like fun books, and that was fun for me. Like, I was reading that stuff. So, and it really, the whole Conversations with God books, like, there's a whole, you know, side of like spiritual stuff that, as like a little kid, I was reading. And so I did know that just resonated with me. So yeah, like, what is our true nature? Like, we're okay. You know, we really, I always think of like true nature. I don't think there's a mistake that we use that word nature. Like, as I talk to you, I can look over my computer and see this beautiful tree outside and like all these trees in my backyard. And, you know, nature doesn't have a problem. It takes a human brain to worry, to feel anxious, to say there's a problem, to say there's something wrong. You know, it's a human brain thing. And yes, we're all humans and we all have brains, and that's wonderful. But we're also part of nature. And our brains, you know, when our brains kind of just quiet down, or when we're not focusing on what our brain does as if it's so powerful and it's like the end all be all, and if you are, it's okay, because we've been kind of taught that. Our society is all about the brain and the mind, and we're going to think our way through all of our problems, you know, we're so intelligent. So, you know, we've been pointed there. So we look there. It's not our fault. It's innocent. But, and the brain is wonderful, and there's a lot we can do by understanding how it works and getting that. But there's something bigger than the brain, you know, like, what's powering our brains right now? We're not. Our brain isn't powering itself. Like, there, you know, there's a bigger energy. What's making my tree turn into fall? Like, what's changing, what's spinning the planets, what's changing the seasons, you know? So whatever that energy is, I think is us as well. We're just part of nature. And we also happen to have brains. So we have a whole other range of experience as well.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting dynamic of being part of nature, but then having this brain that sort of like fools us into thinking that we're this separate thing. Yes. I love a couple of things that you mentioned there was, you know, that just nature does its thing. Like, we don't worry about it. That's something that I often tell my clients. It's just like, I'm not worried about you. Like, we don't need to get stressed out. Like, we're just getting back to what you normally do, you know, just like that good place. A lot of times we get caught up in this sort of thoughts of like, oh, well, you know, I have to control my weight, or I have to figure out how to eat. It's like, well, do you have to control the beating of your heart or the breathing of your lungs? You know, it's like, it's interesting how we've segmented some things as like, oh, that's something I have to be aware of, or oh, I have to figure out how to eat. Well, what did humans do for so, so many years before there was a Google search that told them the right way to eat. Like, right. We just did it, right? So it's interesting. Tell us, you wanted to talk a little bit about, I would love to as well, looking back at how we kind of get tricked into that, right? Like, we have our brains that are thinking this. We're kind of part of this energy. We're part of nature. But then we kind of think our way into sort of an anxiety or a frenzy or like feeling like we need to control these things. So speak a little bit to that. Like, how does that happen? How do we kind of like shift away from that? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I think intuitively, again, we know, and as little kids, we're more in that realm of just being in nature. Like, we're just part of nature. We're just part of life, right? And of course, we have a me, little kids even, you know, we see it develop. If you have children around 1.5, 2, everything's me and mine, and they're kind of learning that. But that's sort of where you see, like, you know, it's kind of separate off and get more into our thinking and stuff. But even then, they don't cling to that the way that we learn to as adults. Like, they're just sort of like, they're just in life. And so that's possible for all of us. That doesn't expire. It has nothing really to do with being a kid. It's just that as we get older, I think usually something happens that kind of scares us, and it kind of, we decide, well, we're going to figure this out. You know, I'm going to prevent this from happening again, or I'm going to figure out why my parents are so crazy, or whatever it is. And we go to our intellect to figure that out. And again, that's reinforced and encouraged by society. So we always have that clear, healthy, resilient place in us that we used to live in all the time, or most of the time. And we all also have the ability to think. We're constantly thinking. And it just becomes a bit of a shift. It's almost like, I call it like an identity crisis. It's like, when we're little, we just think we're all part of the world and everything's fine. And then we get this whole concept, just thoughts about me and mine and who I am and all of that. And then as that gets louder and louder, and as we pay more and more attention to it, it gets louder and louder. Well, that starts to look like us. It's just an identity crisis. Like, it's like, oh, I'm this voice instead of no. I'm like the silence between the, you know, when the voice is quieted down, that's who we really are. But we start to think we're the voice. So I forget what your question was, what got me on that. But like, so we get caught up in that. Oh, okay. Like, how habits and all that stuff like develop. So we start just listening to that voice so much and thinking it's us. And think about that voice, like you said, it's controlling. It wants to figure everything out. Like, it's very different from the content that comes up when we're just in life. We're just hanging out. It's like linear, logical. I'm me and I'm special. I need to figure all this. I need to know how to eat so I can maintain the way that I think I should be. You know, it's just layer after layer after layer of thought and opinion and concept that aren't true. They are not objectively true. They just aren't. It's our personal spin on things. It's just our opinions. But then we kind of get so caught up in this big ball of opinion, and we think that's us, that we go around, yeah, trying to control life and control ourselves and control our experience, and losing sight of the fact that, like you said, we don't need to do that. We have something natural that kind of moves us through life, our own common sense, wisdom, intuition, that's always there.
Beautiful. And how would you say that, like, shifting towards that, like that perspective of like, you know, I'm more part of something, or away from kind of that identity crisis, like what are some things that can help guide people toward that sort of insight or that sort of understanding? And also on that side, like, you know, how do we do that? And then what are sort of the benefits of that? Like, how is that human experience different from that I have to control things, I have to figure things out, I need to fix things?
Yeah. Well, it's first, it's like, it's totally different. And it's not. Okay. So it's a bit of a parody. Like, we're still human. We're never going to stop thinking. And we're never going to be completely free of thinking that, believing that our thinking is us. You know, like that, I think that is just human. Because the thing is, when our minds are constantly talking, all of that thought, first, we've been identifying with it as us for so long. But second, like it's not a crappy movie. Like, it is well made. So that thought comes up and it informs our senses even. So you know, we see what we think first and then we see. We think first and then we smell and then we taste. And, you know, so like, it's such a amazing movie in our heads. It's such a like well-made special effects. Like we feel it emotionally, we feel it physically. It looks like it's coming from outside, happening to us. You know, it's just a big illusion, a big inner illusion, like how our experience is, but it is our own thinking. It's our own mind projecting this to us, but in a really great way. So as we see more about that, like, so, you know, we're never going to be completely free of that. I don't know anyone who ever is. Even the most enlightened people, I think, still have moments of getting really caught up in their thinking, or they think it's coming from outside of that, you know, like it's never like we leave it behind, but we can leave it more behind and we can have insight, like you said. And it's kind of similar to, I think, a lot of like in mindfulness and stuff, like what tends to happen is, you know, that's all going on, but it's just like a millimeter further away. And then it's maybe like, I don't know my metrics, but then eventually it's like an inch away, and then it's like 6 inches away. And then it's like, oh, I noticed that. So, you know, like, I don't know, we just notice our mind taking us in a direction, but we are kind of connected with the real us a little bit too, because we can notice our mind in that way. So the experience of life is awesome. Like it's not perfect. We still have bad moments, of course, but there's almost a spaciousness. That's kind of the best way I like to describe it. There's like a spaciousness in our heads where we notice those insecure thoughts, habits, all that stuff coming up, but it's not such a convincing movie anymore. It's almost like on the screen over here.
Yeah. I love that. That concept in mindfulness of like being the observer, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it captures that is like, you still have all the same thoughts. Like a lot of people will have this idea of like, well, what do I need to do to get rid of this voice in my head? Right. But it's like, you know what? Just love it, because it's the voice in your head. Like it is a part of you. It's a part of this experience, but not being so like swept up into it. Just like you said, that observer place. I love how you talked about it as kind of like, okay, you've got this much and then this much and then this much space. I think a lot of times we seek to like, okay, how can I just like switch the light off or switch the light on, just have it all. But I really find that it's more of a spectrum of like, oh, I'm aware of the thoughts going on in my head. Okay. Oh, well now I'm observing the thoughts going on in my head. Now I know to expect those thoughts. Okay. Now I'm watching myself observing the thoughts, you know, it's like back and back. So when you said getting back in touch with like the real us, like Amy, what is your philosophy on like, what is the real us? I know that's kind of like this big philosophical question, but like, what is your opinion about what is the real us? What is a person?
Well, I mean, I don't know, obviously. I don't know like the answer, but I just, it's that place that I call it home base. You know, it's just that place where we're just more in life than in our heads. So we're always thinking, like, you know, we're never going to not think, and our thinking is never objectively true. So just like we cannot take the filter off our brain. There is a filter 24/7 now and for our entire lives. Now, sometimes there's a really thick filter. Like when you're in a bad mood, you see everything is horrible. So, and sometimes when you're in a nice mood or you're just, you know, it's just a normal day, the filter's a little thinner, but everything's contaminated to some extent by our brain. Like we don't see life as it is. So that's never going to like really go away. But I think it's a place of ease and resilience and just being a little more connected to that, like a different quality of thought, like what we might call common sense or intuition, you know, where we're just in life, like we're just being informed and moved along by something bigger, like, you know, and I know people will have a lot of thinking about that, and that can sound like it's so mysterious or like, well, how do I do that? And, you know, it's so commonplace. We're all doing it all the time. Like we're going to go eat lunch after this call. Like if you have to go to the bathroom, you're just going to find yourself walking to the bathroom. Like if, you know, my dog like comes over, I'm just going to find myself petting my, I don't have to think about that stuff. And so it's that simple. Like there is something that just sort of runs us. And I think when we're there, we're kind of more at us, like kind of the underlying us. And then we can get off into our heads, and that's okay too. That's part of us, but it's different.
Yeah. Beautiful. I know that Dan Gilbert, who researches, you know, just happiness stuff and kind of the fallacies that we get into thinking we know what will make us happy. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to a study this morning about how, you know, they did this big long-term, you know, like lots and lots of people. And they had this little app where they just kind of measured people's happiness and what they were doing. And the biggest factor of, it didn't matter what they were doing, the biggest factor of happiness was, were they engaged with what they were doing? So they could be washing the dishes, but if they were just thinking of washing the dishes, their happiness was much higher. They could be washing those same dishes, but if their thinking was somewhere else, you know, they were less happy. So I think that's so interesting, kind of that idea of when you're in the present moment, when you kind of just let your life be happening and you're in that experience, that seems to be a big factor of happiness and satisfaction as well, which I think is really interesting.
Definitely. Yeah. And I love, even with emotions and stuff, like one of the things that's been so life-changing for me is kind of knowing that our feelings, our habits, our thoughts, all of that, they just have a natural flow to them. You know, so this voice is always talking, but it doesn't get stuck. Like, it works, you know, it keeps flowing. And I know we all have the experience of it getting stuck because we hear something we don't like and we freak out about it. So, you know, it's like we take it very personally and we try to make it go away or make it, like you said about your clients, like make it be, how do I shut you up? Well, that's putting so much attention on it that we have to keep it alive in order to try to shut it up. Like, we're just getting in the way. It's, again, we're nature. Like, nature has a flow. You can try to change nature, but it's not going to work very well. If you want nature to change, you just leave it alone. Quit interfering. And that's the same with us and our experience. So I think, so for me, like something just like seeing, I just don't really care how I feel that much. Like it's a really different thing than I think all of this. And there's nothing wrong. Like, I think positive psychology and all that stuff is great. It's all, you know, trying to give us a better experience of life. But I know, like, myself for sure, like I can take that and make it like my new mission. Like, I'm supposed to always be happy, or like I should be here, or this is what life should feel like. I think that's a big lie. Like, it's a huge lie, and it doesn't help us. Like, it makes us worse, because it makes our experience worse, you know, because now we're in there trying to manipulate things. So now, compared to like 10 years ago or something, if I'm just having a bad day or feeling anxious or anything, I just don't really care. It doesn't feel personal. It doesn't feel like a problem. It doesn't feel like anything I need to do anything about, because I know there's a natural flow to it and I know it's going to change. And when we think about, like, we talk about habits and binge eating and all kinds of things like that, I mean, it's such an amazing thing in that regard, because it's like, oh, well, I'm really caught up here, or I'm really obsessed with this, or I'm really feeling this urge, whatever. I feel this often. It's not a big deal. It's going to change. There's something I need to do. And if I get in there and try to think about it differently, that's fine. It's well-meaning, but it kind of just interferes. Like, if you have a river that's already flowing, why do we need to jump in the middle of the river and try to stop it? You're just going to slow it down rather than just let it flow.
Yeah, it's actually one of the things that I tried back before, you know, I found the principles that, you know, I know that you and I have a lot of overlap in what we teach there. And that has worked for both of us. But back in like my, I've got to figure this out, you know, before I had really that answer that helped me, you know, overcome binge eating, bulimia, that sort of thing. One of the things that I tried was I wanted to track my emotions, and I was trying to track all my emotions so I could figure out how they worked in with my eating disorder and blah, right? Yeah. Like that sort of panicky, like, you know, in that experience that isn't as pleasant. It didn't do anything for my binge eating, of course, but I just thought it was very interesting to see, you know, one thing that I say is, you know, the best way to change how you feel is to just wait. Just wait. Like, everything changes. We don't have to do anything. And I thought it was so interesting how over time it's like, you know, things feel bad. You're in a bad mood. Things seem down. And it just feels like that's the way that life is and has been for a long time. Yeah. And then if you just wait like a day or a minute or whatever it is, like, things seem happy. And like, you know what? Things have been okay for a while, right? We tend to kind of like project in our past and our future that however we feel right now is the way it's been. But when you look at it, it's just, it's constantly changing. Everything is just constantly changing without us doing anything. So.
And too, yeah, that's so great. I mean, that's like we say a lot of like do nothing. And that's a hard thing for people to hear. It's so ironic because it's like, I'm telling you, there's no job for you. Like you have no responsibility. There's nothing you must do. And then everybody's like, well, how do I do nothing? Like, what are the steps to doing nothing? You know?
Yeah, give me the 5 steps to be able to do nothing. Right. And I'll do it all perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, we're just so used to being told what to do. That's the thing. You know, we're so used to being redirected back into our heads and being told to think our way through things and being told what to do. So you tell a kid do nothing and they have no problem. That's fine by them. You tell a 20 or 30 or 40 year old do nothing and it's like a big mystery. It's a conundrum, you know, like how does one do nothing? But something I was going to say after a voice. Oh, about kind of, yeah, being able to just know that all of that passes. So the best thing to do is wait, like you said. And also I think what's cool is seeing that it's not personal, you know, that like it isn't, we're not feeling a certain way because of something we did wrong or because of who we are or because of something that happened out in the world. We're just feeling the story that our mind is projecting to us. It doesn't really even have anything to do with us, and especially us in the bigger sense of us. Like, you know, I mean, we're just like this little ball of perfection, and then there's just a bunch of thought hanging out over it. Like, this isn't touching this, you know, it's like this, like the sky metaphor. Like, you can have a tornado coming through the sky, and it doesn't affect the sky. The sky doesn't care. The sky's still blue behind all that. The sky's like, okay, do your thing. Be done, you know? Like, there's just no problem there. There's no personal issue there. And so that's another thing that I think makes it so much easier to just not really care what you're feeling. Because like I was just telling a client this right before we talked today, about a week and a half ago, I had like a little temper tantrum. Like, I don't know. I don't get that upset. I mean, I have human emotion for sure. And it's not all good, but, I haven't had a temper tantrum in a while. And I mean, I like slammed a door. Like it was not a good few minutes. I was mad. And I was really caught up in it, obviously, to like get to the point of slamming a door and everything. But it didn't, it's not like I spent the rest of the day thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just slammed a door. I mean, look, I'm like talking about it publicly because I don't care. I don't think it means anything. I don't think it means a thing. I don't think I should have done things differently or felt any differently. I think I'm a human being who got caught up in emotion and then it went and then it changed. And like, we can see it like that, including habits and the things we have so much shame about and all of that. I mean, just, you know, we can imagine like how that would just change the world, really.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I went to that same place of like, how would the world be different if like, as individuals, of course you have your individual experience of like, you know what? My thoughts aren't personal. My emotions aren't personal. My thoughts, just because I think them doesn't mean it's true. Just because I feel it doesn't mean it's important. Doesn't mean it's based on anything. Sort of that, like, you know what? Like, it's not personal. And for us to be able to have those attitudes toward other people too. Because there's the layer of like what you did, right? It's like, you know, I ate a brownie or whatever. And that is nothing. It's just a thing that you did. Right. But then a lot of times the suffering is that all the shame that we put on top of it. Oh, well, that means this and this and this. And that means, you know, like that I'm going to have to feel this way, right? There's a have to on it. And then, oh, other people will think of it, you know, this way, like they'll view me in this way. And it's so interesting how we can have, you know, two people with the exact same experience and they interpret it, you know, totally different ways. It's like, oh, she's not, I'm being more quiet. Everyone thinks that I'm stuck up. Oh, I'm being more quiet. Everyone thinks that I'm sad. Oh, everyone thinks that I'm content. It's like, right. We can interpret it in so many different ways. So if we just kind of have this, like, you know what? I know that nothing that I feel or think is personal. I know that nothing that you think or feel is personal. And then we all just kind of play in the sandbox and do nothing. And right. Yeah. Like the good life, right?
Exactly. It just comes down to, yeah, just not taking ourselves so seriously or our experience and our conclusions so seriously, you know, and the conclusions and experiences of other people, like you said, it just doesn't matter. It's a really cool thing in relationships too, you know, to like be in that place where you can, you know, you can get annoyed with someone, you can bicker with someone, you can like, all that stuff can happen. but it just doesn't matter. Like it's not, maybe it's not the most fun place to be, but it's not like you tell a story about it. 'Cause I can remember like when I was younger, it like really telling stories about that stuff. Like, oh, like you're not supposed to fight this much. This much fighting is okay, but this much is bad. Or like, oh, these things you're supposed to have in common. But if you don't have, if you have these things in common, you know what I mean? Like there's just so many little rules and they're subtle, they're hidden. We don't realize we're making everything up, making up all these rules and expectations. And to just be able to be like, you know, my husband, like I just kind of like hanging out with him. And sometimes he gets on my last nerve. And sometimes I tell him and it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect like our core relationship. It just, it's just how we're feeling in the moment, you know? And yeah, so it's a really, it would change the world. Think about like all the big stuff that happens in the world, you know, like, I mean, if someone knows to not take their thinking so seriously, they're not going to get to the point of finding a weapon and going to a school or a building or a play. You know what I mean? There's a lot of time in that. There's a lot of space in that for new thought to come in. But I think why it doesn't, and it does, I'm sure, but why we keep pushing it away is because we don't understand this. We think, no, I'm mad and this is going to make it better. You know, or whatever that thinking is, I'm mad and they did this to me. And it just doesn't work that way. So I just think everything could be changed if people knew this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like there's so much judgment on not taking our thinking seriously. Like, oh, well, you have to, you know, take it seriously. So much suffering is that, oh, well, I'm not supposed to think that. It's interesting. I was just listening to an audio course on some mindfulness principles, and they were talking about how it's incredibly like helpful and healing for people when they have a thought pop into their head, you know, maybe it's even a bad thing or a bad thing they want to do or whatever it is. To not like try to force it away, you know, like the, oh, well, don't think about that or that's bad, you know, or feel like they're a bad person if they like go down that thought. Like it's not personal, it's just a thought. And to actually explore it and be with that experience of like, oh, this is something that I feel like doing. And it doesn't mean that it's personal. It just means that I'm just gonna like feel what it feels like to do it. And the need to act on that, like the compulsion of, well, now I think it, now I have to do it, really goes down because no, you're okay with where you're at. I think just that surprising third option, like we're kind of talking about, you know, you don't have to believe your thoughts, you don't have to believe, you know, your emotions. I think it's interesting how we often think that we have to be on the other side of something, like, oh, well, I have to not care at all, or I have to care about it. When in fact, like, For most things that I find in my experience, the answer is really neutrality. Like a lot of, you know, body image work, it's not about loving your body at all. It's about feeling neutral about your body. It doesn't take up a lot of mental bandwidth, what your body looks like or what you're eating or what your emotions are. You're just in an experience. You don't have to get attached and like be the extreme on the other side. We tend to kind of have this natural all or nothing thinking. Yeah. So yeah, that kind of third way, right?
Yeah. You know, and like, even like with thoughts, like you're saying, like, they're not even ours. Part of that, I think, is like, oh, I feel like, even as you're saying it, just is coming, like, and that's how people talk, all of us, right? Like, I feel this way or I feel that way. And sometimes I'll just say to people, like, I don't think you do. Like, I kind of have this image of it. It's just like our mind, you know, our brain just goes in a direction. It's just a computer. It just runs the same files over and over again. So just because your brain's going in a direction, that's just a habit. That's just a mental habit. That doesn't mean you feel that way. But what we're used to doing is something shows up in our experience and we own it. Oh, this is about me. It's mine. I must think this. You know, so like all the time people will say things like, I'm sure you hear this all the time too, like, oh, I'm just so obsessed with, losing weight, or I'm so obsessed with this or that, or this, I wish this wasn't so important to me. And yet it's a thought that I know they've been grappling with for years. And it's like, well, what if that's not so important to you? What if it's just like that program in your brain's running? And that's so cool too. Like our thoughts aren't ours. They're not personal. They're not ours. We didn't put them there. We can think stuff on purpose for a short period of time, but 99% of our thoughts just show up in our experience. So it gets back to, like you said, let's just play. Let's just play with each other because it just doesn't mean so much.
Yeah. We're just all hanging out. An exercise that I that I like to do with my clients when they kind of get in this place of like, you know, like, oh, well, you know, this, I've just been thinking about this. We kind of are in a place where, you know, people think that they have control over all their thoughts and that, oh, well, how do I stop thinking about this? And they'll just say, okay, listen to me. All right. They're listening. Dancing polar bear. And I'm like, what's in your head? They're like, a dancing polar bear. I'm like, totally against your will. Totally, you are thinking of that bear completely against your will. You had no control over that. I forced that image into your brain. Yeah. And it's like, we have so much experience of thought that comes in and out all throughout the day that we don't take personally. I think there's a huge portion that we don't take personally. You know, we watch TV shows and we just have thoughts and we have images, but we don't notice that we're not taking it personally. Right. And then we have these sort of sticky things that are more charged, that we have more shame around. And then all of a sudden, like, why am I just thinking about food all the time? It's like, well, you're thinking about other stuff too. Why does this feel like something that needs to be in your control, that needs to be totally changed, you know, that you feel like is, you know, your responsibility, your burden, you know? Yeah. And I love how you talked about how, well, yeah, maybe that's important to you. Maybe not. Just how we get these habits in our brain, right? Of like, it's a habit of thought. Like, oh, well, like you said, you know, I think that labels are useful. I would absolutely agree with that. Because I feel like there are these labels of like, you know what? Like, I always think of this. Like, this is just something that has always been important to me. I've always been obsessed with whatever it is. Right. And really with that sort of, it's a new moment every moment. And the only reason that it feels like it's always been that way is because you keep reinforcing the same thing. Yeah. What happens at any moment when you start reinforcing something different, right? It's like, yeah, we're all new every moment. So
exactly. We have that refresh button. We're just constantly refreshing, you know, but we don't let ourselves because we're holding on to that. Like the way I describe that a lot is just the metaphor that comes to my mind. It's like, again, that river. If we have a river of experience that's constantly moving through us, every moment is fresh, but we get in the river with a bucket and we grab a bucket of water. And then we're like, look at my experience. I ate a brownie. Like, look at my experience. You know, it's like, well, okay, just drop the bucket and go on to the next moment. But no, we've carried this bucket for decades with us, you know?
Yeah. And this is what, you know, this bucket of experience means, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. I ate a brownie and it means so much because I am a person who has no control. Right. I am a person who, it's a bad thing to eat brownies. And it's like, you know what? Your neighbor who doesn't have a sort of identity around food ate a brownie yesterday too. And they don't remember. They didn't notice there was a brownie in the kitchen. They picked it up and they ate it and they just like went on. Like it wasn't charged in that way. Right. So I think it's so interesting how we kind of pick what to put in our bucket, right? Like I'm a food person. I'm a cigarettes person. I'm a, you know, like shopping person, like whatever it is. And it's like, well, we're all just maybe all that stuff, right?
Yeah. I've heard people talk about that. I love that. Just thinking too, in terms of our brain and stuff, like how much sensory data, how much stuff is coming at us, how much thought, how much stuff is coming at us constantly, and how we have to filter out like 90 some percent of it. We have to, we'd go insane if we didn't. So yeah, like you're saying, the filtering system is so made up. It's totally selective. It's totally arbitrary. You know, we just get it in our head. And then exactly, like, you know, just why certain things pop out. For me, like all of that just kind of comes back together in kind of coming back to this basic message of like, why are we all taking ourselves so seriously? Taking our conclusions, our experiences so seriously. Because if you see everybody, every thought is biased. We have 7 billion brains on Earth and they all think different things. So that one person, you know, you're not right. You know, somebody, we're all making it up. It's all biased. And that, yeah, then it's all like some of it comes to mind and some doesn't. And we filter this and we don't filter that. You just get down like looking at all of those kind of things in the way. And it's like what you're left with is like something that becomes so random and not anything to hang your hat on. Like, I used to do research like in a lab and try to like, you know, publish it in journals and stuff. And I just have been thinking lately because I heard someone describe it as a contaminated experiment. Every thought we have, it's like a contaminated experiment. No one would publish that. Yet we base our lives around it. You know, this stuff could, no one would accept it out in the bigger world, but we base our life around it. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. That is so true and so interesting. And we hold it you know, of such importance. And I think it's so interesting to learn more about how, like you said, you know, our brains filter out most experience. Like, you know, I didn't know that before I learned that. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many things that we don't understand kind of about how our brains work and our process of thinking. But before we have that understanding, like, you know, it, we just believe it because we never thought not to. You know, we don't know what we don't know. Like, you know, the reticular activating system, like essentially like your brain will find whatever it's looking for. Like if you're, if you do, you know, have something that your husband is doing that's getting on your nerves, like, well, now your mind is bringing, you know, all the experiences of all the times he's ever gotten your nerves. And it's blocking out all the times where you've had these wonderful moments together where, wow, there's nowhere else I'd rather be, you know? So it's so interesting how our brains have adapted in so many ways to do things that we don't even know, because we just kind of inherited these brains, you know? It's like, oh, okay, I have a brain that's kind of primed, you know, to be anxious in a lot of ways because it's always looking for survival and, you know, it's always, you know, tracking danger. But we don't know that. We're just kind of living in it. So yeah. I think it's a great thing to kind of understand. If you're listening to this interview, congratulations, because you're getting good information. Like, I think it's just so great to be educated about kind of how our thought experience is so that we can kind of understand the neutrality of it or just be a little more at ease or less charged or less shame or, you know, those things that kind of make a better experience.
Yeah. And to know, and that's what kind of, to like bring it back to the spiritual part too, you know, like to know that there is something bigger than the brain, because that could be disoriented for someone, like, oh, well, now I don't trust anything I think, which you and I kind of see that as a nice thing. But, you know, I see a lot of people that kind of get thrown into some kind of big existential crisis, like, well, what's true and what's real, you know? And so I just think it's nice to look at the little things, like, you know, when we were kids, before we started thinking so much, like, we were just okay. We were okay. We didn't need all this thinking. We didn't need to trust this and that. Like, we just were okay. And we figured it out. And we didn't just sit around because we didn't have a plan or goals or whatever. Like, you have a daughter similar to my kid's age. Like, they are busy little people. They don't have goals and plans necessarily, but that doesn't mean they don't do anything. In fact, you could almost make an argument that just being in life makes us much more productive. Because if they want to paint, they go paint, and then they want to do this, and then they want to do that, and it's all good, because they're not judging themselves and thinking, well, why? And why did I only want to do this for 5 minutes? Maybe I should be more well-rounded and go do this now. Like, they just let nature guide them, and figures, you know, it kind of just works out. And the little things, like knowing, okay, when we fall asleep at night, or when we first wake up, before our mind starts going with what day of the week it is and what we have to do, there's just a feeling there. There's just a peace there, you know, like there's, to me, it's clear. I don't want to say clearly, because I don't know. I know everyone has to kind of come to their own insight around this stuff. But to me, it's clear that there's something so much bigger than that machine, than a computer in our heads. And to be able to, we don't need that. I don't know, but it seems like to be able to like kind of connect with that a little bit, feel into that, it helps with navigating a bit. Like, it helps to see, okay, I don't have to trust this, because that doesn't mean I'm out alone in the world. That means I have something much, much better that I can actually fall back on. It's always there to help me.
Yeah. I love that. I think a good example of, you know, seeing that in real life experience, I know that's been helpful for me, is like, you know, we oftentimes have this feeling like, well, you know, I need to plan things, I need to do things, I need to be productive. This thought of, if I don't do anything, then what if you didn't do anything, you know? But we kind of have this panic, like, I have to be doing something. And I say, you know, take any year of your life, you know, take the past year. What was your plan for that year? And what actually happened? And it's never like, did you ever think that you would be here a year ago? And usually it's a resounding, like, no, I had no idea this would happen. I had no idea that would happen. Like, oh, I'm so glad this worked out. That was so much better than that other thing I thought. It's like, you didn't have to do anything. You were in the illusion of that you were doing stuff, but really life just kind of happened.
Yeah.
And here we are. When you were talking about kind of that child, like, you know, you're busy. You don't have necessarily a goal, but you're doing stuff. It made me think of my daughter, how, you know, sometimes she'll say, oh, I'm bored. And I know from my perspective, because I know her and I've had experience with her, and it's probably this way with other kids, but I only have one, so I don't want to speak for anyone else. Yeah. But I know with her, like, if she's bored, all I have to do is not give her anything to do. Because in about 3 minutes, she's not bored anymore. Like, she finds something that she's engaged in, that she's enjoying. So sometimes I feel like with us as adults, there's a little bit of a lag. Like, oh no, what do I do? How do I do nothing? Well, don't worry about how to do it. Yeah. Just kind of like be open to that experience. And then without anything to do, you kind of find yourself having things that you want to do. And even with our busy lives, I know that, you know, for me personally in my life, like taking time to do nothing, like it's not like I just do nothing, but it's that time that isn't planned that oftentimes is some of the most fulfilling time of my day, where it's just like, this is my white space, you know, like this is when life just gets to happen and I don't have to be anywhere or be talking to this person or doing this thing. And that can be a beautiful, just life satisfaction, self-care sort of thing, I find. So,
and I do that too. And it's actually ends up a lot of times being very productive too, because that's when your mind's not going through the list. So your mind settles down. So then new things can come up. Like that's when you have that creative new idea, or you just see something that you've been grappling with in your head. It just finally shows up.
Yeah. And I love this sort of mental space of that. You know, you hear from so many people like, oh, I get all my best ideas in the shower. It's like the one time of the day where you can't hold your phone. You don't have any, you can't have music on. You can't have media you're ingesting. You're under a stream of water. Yeah. And for, you know, those 15 minutes, your brain just gets a point to relax. Oh, and then it's like, oh, that's the best idea I've had all day. Like, what if we gave ourselves more like shower experiences, you know? Like, and just let that creativity sort of happen on its own again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think just knowing this does that for us. So we don't have to go take 10 showers a day, but like, if you know that this is the way it works, I think you're just naturally going to lay off the thinking a little bit. You know, like just like you and I, like just try to build in that little bit of quiet time and like do things. And because I think what I hear a lot of people doing is like, oh, I'm going to give myself some time, you know, but then they're feeling guilty. Oh, I should be working. I should be doing that, you know? So it's just, I think it's just having a real kind of insight around that and seeing, you know, it actually is good all the way around. Like there is no problem at all. And in fact, a lot of good things come from having that quiet time, just kind of seeing how that works.
Yeah, beautiful. I know that every sort of nation and culture has their different issues, but just from what I observed, we were in Italy for about 5 weeks this summer, and it was just a beautiful time. And just one thing that I observed is just like people just take like breaks in the middle of the day, like long breaks, like, oh, this restaurant isn't open for the next 3 hours. Because everyone is just not there. And there's no like, these are the established times. It's like, oh no, they just, I guess we'll go somewhere else because they're closed. And then, you know, in the evening, you know, lots of, you know, the little old Italian men, they're just sitting on chairs outside and they're just sitting. Sometimes they're talking to somebody else, but a lot of times they're just there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we don't see that as much in the United States, of just people just kind of around, yeah, you know, like having their human experience. And I just feel like there's so much value in that.
Yeah, me too.
So maybe a few things to just, you know, kind of takeaways from this conversation today is this idea of like, we don't need to believe or like take personally our thoughts or our experiences, and just kind of being okay with that white space. I think that, you know, like you were talking about, you know, how would the world be different? How would the world change if we didn't take these things personally? And I think if we put more value on that quiet time, on that open space, because I feel like we have such a like, well, if I'm not doing something actively right now that's going towards something that's eventually going to make money, you know what I mean? Like we have all these sorts of measures of value on the things that we do in our life, and, you know, putting value on the really experience, like the human experience of just being there, you know?
Yeah. And just knowing, and that's easier to do again, like the more we know how this works, that actually things happen. Like I love what you said about the plans for the year. You know, it's such an illusion of control we have. We think because we have plans and we're thinking like, we think it matters, but it doesn't. Does it? Stuff happens, like you know, I mean, so much life just happens. So the more we're able to know that that's, you know, we're part of nature. And just like in nature, there's an energy there. There's a movement. Ideas occur to us. We don't have to plant them there. Like, things show up and we can trust that. And the more we just start to trust that, then it doesn't become a matter of you taking, you know, our word for it. Is people just see it themselves. Like, just like we're saying, oh yeah, like it actually does feel really rewarding and good to take that downtime. And it's helpful for my business too. And it's just good, you know, we have to kind of see that ourselves. So I think it's great that people are hearing this and can kind of play with that, you know, take our word for it if you want, but like, let it be your experience too and see how that works. Cause I mean, I just know it's going to work that way for you, because all humans, we're all the same. We all operate in the same way. The content is different, you know, the thoughts and experiences are different, but what matters, like, that stuff comes and goes, obviously. Like, what matters is the same in all of us, and it does work that way.
Yeah. I love that. And like you were saying, like, this is, you know, kind of maybe the more spiritual you know, like, ideas of, you know, kind of what we do as coaches and as leaders and as teachers, you know, all those sorts of things. It's like, there are lots of different aspects to it, and kind of exploring more of the, just like, hey, this is the human experience, you know, just kind of how we're all connected and nothing's very personal and we're just kind of, you know, in this and we don't have to control too much. I think that's a really fun and important perspective to look at it from. And I'm so excited that we got to chat about it. And thank you so much for being on. Anything else that's kind of on your mind that you feel like we're missing from kind of this experience today being complete, or do you feel like it's complete now?
I feel like it's good. Like, one thing I do want to mention. So, you know, just again, when we're trying to see new thought, or like a solve a problem or get over a habit or something like that, just, and this may be obvious in what we talked about, but I think, you know, the place we always like kind of look is like what we're like, our experience, our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors. And like we said, we try to manipulate and change those, or try to even like think differently or feel differently. And I guess I just, again, in like the bigger spiritual picture of things, like want to point people toward before that stuff. So there's something, again, before the brain. There's something before a thought takes shape, before a feeling takes shape, which aren't ours. They just show up in our experience. But before that, like, get curious about what that is. Like, where does this stuff come from? How is it that it's always been coming, that we always have new thoughts showing up in our heads? How is it that the planets have always been spinning for as long as we know? Like, you know, really get curious about that stuff, and not get so caught up in like the output, the temporary manifestation. Like, I have this thought or that brownie or this thing, you know, and because that's where we look. But if we just kind of, I just always want to take people's shoulders and like, no, it's actually over here. So look toward that. And I know that's vague because we don't know what that is, but it's like this formless, it's before all this stuff. And I think, you know, I just know that's where we have insights and we'll see new things.
Yeah, I love that. I'm so glad that we didn't miss that, because I feel like that's such a great way to just kind of cap off this conversation. Yeah. I love that you mentioned about, like, you know, looking, being curious. I think that's just a great perspective on life in general, just being curious without the need to solve it, without the like, oh, you know, Amy's telling me to be curious, so I have to figure it out. The point isn't to figure it out. The point is just looking in that direction. And I love just that perspective and, you know, kind of redirecting to that place. So yeah, thank you so much for all of your comments and wisdom, and thank you for being on. Do you have any sort of like upcoming programs or, you know, anything that you wanted to mention, like, while people are, you know, watching and, you know, hearing about you?
Yeah, I do. I have a live workshop coming up in Michigan, October. I don't know if it's how close it's coming up based on when this goes out, but it's October 7th through 9th. And on my website, there's all kinds of information about that. It's a great weekend to just kind of get together with like-minded people in a relatively small group and just explore this and see, like, what does it mean to be human? How does this work? And all the stuff we talked about with our thinking and experience and all that. And it's nice to kind of go away from your home and just get in a nice little container of like a retreat and look at that. So that's what that weekend is. I also have a course coming up called Break Your Habit that I run each year at this time based on my book, The Little Book of Big Change. So yeah, you can check out the website for more on that too.
Beautiful. And there will be links to Amy's website in the show notes. So go ahead and check that out. And I just love the information that you put out there and what you're doing. And thank you for being the voice that you are in the world and for being on, returning. That's always a good thing, right? If you're coming back, like it's a good thing. So thank you so much.
Thank you for everything you do. It's wonderful. I love having this connection. And I'm so grateful that you're out there doing everything you're doing for people too.
Thank you. I very much value our connection and thank you for being on. And yeah, absolutely. Like check out, you know, the stuff that Amy's putting out there and I'll put all that information in the show notes. And thank you guys for watching today. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Comment below the questions and the thoughts that came up for you as you are watching this. Would love to, you know, be hearing your feedback as well and for you to be part of the conversation and appreciate your time today and for being here. And this is Lydia and Amy signing off. Mwah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!